Hello, and welcome to the Word Theater Short Story Podcast, your weekly access to the world's finest short stories, recorded live in Los Angeles, New York, and London, usually with a writer in the room. My name is Cedaring Fox. I'm Word Theater's founder and artistic director. Since January of 2020, we have been sharing recordings of stories performed live at our events in the US and the UK over the past 20 years on this free podcast. This weekend, we have kicked off our summer membership drive, and it is our sincere hope that if you are not yet a contributing member, that you will visit wordtheater.org/membership/ and become an enthusiast member today. Word Theater is a tiny organization that depends on support from people like you to keep us going. We have wonderful interns and actors and authors who volunteer their time and talents, but it still costs money to create and produce our programming, live and recorded. Please read up on our membership plans and think about joining us. And also, please tell your friends about Word Theater. Tax-deductible donations help support our Word Theater in the Schools program and bring great programming to you all across the world, wherever you may be, to view on your private members page from the comfort of your own home. For just $150 a year, which breaks down to just $12.50 a month, you will always feel confident knowing that you're contributing to our ability to keep our podcast free and accessible to people all across the globe. We're on a mission to make a better world one story at a time, and we really hope you will join us. On this week's episode of the Word Theater Short Story Podcast, we have a profoundly compassionate Pushcart Prize-winning love story by Amy Hempel. It is difficult to hear and may very well make you weep, but it is worth taking the time to listen and experience all that you will experience, as Amy has masterfully put into words some unspeakable truths and the extraordinarily difficult emotions they evoke. Without telling you too much about her story of full-service shelter, I will simply say now that this story involves animals and Samantha Mathis, a great woman and an actor who loves dogs, was the perfect person to bring the words of our esteemed author from the page to the stage. To introduce her story, we have today's featured author, Amy Hempel. Be sure to keep listening after Samantha's reading, as you will hear more from Amy Hempel and where this difficult but beautiful story came from.
Hello, this is Amy Hempel, the author of A Full Service Shelter. I'm thrilled you chose to include this story. It really is the most important story to me of any I've written.
They knew me as one who shot reeking crap out of cages with a hose and liked it. And would rather do that than go to a movie or have dinner with a friend. They knew me as one who came two nights a week, who came at 4 and stayed till after 10, and knew it was not enough, because there was no such thing as enough at the animal shelter in Spanish Harlem that was run by the city, which kept cutting the funds. They knew us as the ones who checked the day's youth list for the names of the dogs scheduled to be killed the next morning, who came to take the death row dogs, who were mostly pit bulls, for a last long walk, brought them good dinners, cleaned out their kennels, and made their beds with beach towels and bath mats and torn sheets and Scooby-Doo fleece blankets that were still warm from industrial dryers. They knew me as the one who made their beds less neatly over the course of a difficult evening, who thought of the artist whose young daughter came to visit his studio, pointed out the painting she liked, and asked, "Why don't you make them all good?" They knew us as the ones who put pig ears on their pillows, like chocolate in a good hotel. They knew us as vocal vegetarians who brought them cooked meat, roast turkey, rare roast beef, and honey-glazed ham, To top off the canned food we supplied that was still better than what they were fed there. They knew us as the ones who fed them when they were awake, instead of waking them at 2 a.m. for feeding the way the overnight staff had been ordered by a director who felt that they did not have enough to do. They knew me as one who spoke no Spanish, who could only say sí, sí, when someone said about a dog I was walking, qué lindo. And when thuggish guy approached too fast and then said, that's a handsome dude. Look how we exploded another stereotype in a neighborhood recovering from itself. They knew us as the ones who had no time for the argument that caring about animals means you don't also care about people. One of us did, Evelyn, a pediatrician who treated abused children. They knew us as the ones who got tetanus shots and rabies shots, the latter still a serious but no longer in the stomach, and who closed the bites and gashes on our arms with crazy glue. Not the medical grade, but the kind you find at hardware stores, instead of going to the ER for stitches, where we would have had to report the dog, and then they would be put to death. They knew us as the ones who argued the names assigned at intake, saying, who will adopt a dog named Nixon? And when Nixon's name was changed to Dahmer, we ragged on them again and then just let it go when the final name assigned was OG, original gangster. There was always a baby on one of the wards so that staff could write on the kennel card, no one puts baby in the corner. And they finally stopped using precious after a senior kennel worker said of a noble, aged Roddy, I fucking hate this name, but this is a good dog. Though they often got it right. They named the cowboy-colored pocket pit, who thought he was a big stud man, Man-Man. They knew me as the one who did not bother wearing latex gloves or gauzy scrubs to handle the dogs in the sick ward, who wore gloves only when a dog had swallowed his rabies tag and I had to feel for it in feces. They knew me as the one who gave a pit bull a rawhide chew stick swirled in peanut butter, then, after he spit it up and wanted it back, cleaned it off and gave it to him so he could have closure. They knew us as the ones who put our fingers in mouths to retrieve a watch, a cell phone, a red bicycle reflector that a dog sucked on like a lozenge. They knew me as the one who shot reeking crap out of cages with a hose. Scoured metal walls and perforated metal floors with trifectant, a syrupy yellow chemical wash that foamed into the mess and then towel dried the kennel and light the tangible improvement, like mowing a lawn or ironing a shirt that reduced their anxiety by even that much. They knew me as the one who early on went to tell a vet tech the good news that three dogs had been rescued from that morning's list of 12, to which the tech said, that blows. I already filled 12 syringes. They knew us as the ones who repeatedly thanked the other vet tech, the one who was reprimanded for refusing to kill Charlie, a pit bull who licked his hand when the tech went to inject him. And Charlie was adopted less than 24 hours later by a family who sent us photos of their 5-year-old daughter asleep atop Charlie. The whole thing like a children's book, or maybe a German children's book. And we kept thanking that vet tech until he was fired for killing two of the wrong dogs. There are 6-digit ID numbers, 1 digit off. He didn't catch the mistake, but neither had the kennel worker who brought him the wrong dogs, and he still has his job. They knew us as those who found them magnificent, with their wide spaced eyes and powerfully muscled bodies, with their sense of humor and spirit, the way they were the first to the dance and the last to leave, even in a house of horrors, the way stillness would take them over as they pushed their heads into our stomachs while sitting on our laps. They knew us as those whose enthusiasm for them was palpable. Rebecca falling in love with them at first sight, second sight, third sight, and Yolanda tending to them with broken fingers still in a cast, and Joy and the rest with their surpassing competence and compassion. They knew us as those who would sometimes need to take out a chihuahua. Like walking an ant, Lori said, for a break. They knew us as those who didn't mind when they backwashed our coffee, when they licked the paper cup the moment we looked away. They knew us as the ones who worked for free, who felt that an hour stroking a blanket-wrapped dog whose head never left your lap and was killed the next morning was time well spent. They knew me as the least knowledgeable one there, whose mistakes were witnessed by those who knew better. They knew me as the one who liked to apply the phrase, the ideal version of, as in, cure Chanel's mange and you'll see the ideal version of herself. But did not like the term comfort zone and thought one should try and move beyond it. They knew me as one who was unsure of small dogs, having grown up with large breeds and knowing how to read them, but still afraid of Presa Canarios, the Molossers bred in the Canary Islands with their dark bulk and bloodshot bedroom eyes. Since I had lived in San Francisco when a pair of them loose in a Tony apartment house had killed a friend of mine, would stop to get her mail and could not get her door unlocked before he attacked. They knew me as one who called one of their number a dick when he knocked me over, and I slammed into a steel bolt and then left me bleeding from just above an eye. And they knew me as one who guided them to step over a thick, coiled hose in a packed garage that was being used weekly by a member of the board of directors to wash his car the city had paid for. He never went inside the building. They knew us as the ones who attached a life-size plastic horse's head to a tree in the fenced-in junkyard backyard where the dogs could be taken to run off-leash one at a time and to sniff the horse's head before lifting a leg against it. They knew us as those who circulated photos of two pit litter mates dive-bombing each other under the under blankets of a bed to get closer to the large-hearted woman who had adopted them both. They knew us as the ones who took them out, those rated no concern and mild, also moderate, and even severe, though never the red-stamped caution dogs. Although some of the sweetest dogs were the ones rated moderate, which was puzzling until we realized that behavior testing was done when a stray was brought in by police or a dog surrendered by his owner when they were their most scared. Fearful is the new moderate. And how do you think a starving dog will score on resources guarding when you try to take away a bowl of food? They knew me as the one who never handled the questionable dogs because that meant they could turn on you in an instant and you wouldn't know what was coming. And some of us got enough of that outside the shelter. They knew me as the one whom Enrique had it in for, the kennel worker who had asked me to take out a 150-pound cane Corso. And when I said, "Isn't he severe?" said, "Nah, he's a good boy." And when I looked up his card, he was not only severe, he was also DOHHB Hold, Department of Health Hold for Human Bite. He had bitten his owner. They knew me as the one who forgave Enrique when he slipped on the newly installed floor while subduing a frightened mastiff, fell and punctured a lung. After voting to spend nearly $50,000 to replace the facility's floor, the board then had to allocate funds to bring in a crew with sanders to rough up the pricey new floor. The allocated funds were diverted from supplies, so kennel staff had to ask us, the volunteers, for food when they ran out because feeding the dogs had not factored into the board's decision. They knew me as the one who held the scarred muzzle of a long-nosed mutt in sick ward and sang, "There is a nose in Spanish Harlem," until he slept. They knew me as the one who refused to lock the padlocks on their kennels. The locks, a new requirement after someone stole a puppy from small dog adoptions, and which guarantee the dogs will die in an event the place catches fire. They knew me as the one who asked them stupid questions. "How did you get so cute?" And answered the question stupidly, saying on behalf of the giddy dog, "I was born cute and keep getting cuter." They knew me as the one who talked baby talk to the babies and spoke in a normal voice about current events to those who enjoyed this sort of discourse during their one-on-ones. I told an elderly pity about the World War II hero who died in his 90s this year in a Florida hospital after having been subdued while in emotional duress by the use of a metal cage that was fixed in place over his bed. The posy cage had been outlawed in Eastern Europe, yet was still somehow available in Florida. Caged in the space of his bed, he died like a dog, people said. They knew us as the ones who wrote Congress in support of laws made necessary by human cruelty and named for canine victims, Oreo's Law, Nitro's Law, the law for the hero dog from Afghanistan, and that's just this year. They knew me as one who loved in them what I recoiled from in people. The patent need, the cling, the appetite. They knew me as one who saw their souls in their faces, who had never seen eyes more expressive than theirs in colors of honey clover, root beer, riverbed, and the tricolor cracked glass of the Catahoula, rare to find up north. They knew us as the ones who wrote their biographies to post to rescue groups campaigning for the rescue of dogs that we liken to Cleopatra, the Lone Ranger, or Charlie Chaplin's little tramp, to John Wayne, Johnny Depp, and, of course, Brad Pitt, asking each other if we'd gone overboard or soft, like Lenny in Of Mice and Men. They knew us as the ones who tried to gauge what they had been through, as when Laurie said of a dog with shunt straining wounds on his head, "He looks exhausted even when he's asleep." They knew us as the ones who wrote letters to the mayor pointing out that the Department of Health had vastly underestimated the number of dogs in the city to clear itself of misconduct for failing to license more. The political term for this is inflating their compliance record. They knew Joy as the stellar investigator who told the rest of us that the governor helped boost the state budget by helping himself to funds that had been set aside to subsidize spay-neuter services throughout the state. They knew that. They seemed to know that. Just as they seemed to appreciate Joy's attempt to make a new worker understand that staff had not forgotten to write down the times they had walked certain dogs, that the blank space under the dates on the log sheets 3 days in a row meant that those dogs had not been walked in 3 days. When the budget was cut by $1.5 million, Joy began, but the new worker did not believe her. They knew us as the ones who decoded reasons for surrender and knew that don't have time for an elderly, ill dog meant the owner had been hit hard by the ruined economy and could not afford veterinary bills. They knew us as the ones who doted on throwaway moms, lactating dogs left tied to posts in the Bronx after the owners had sold their puppies, and terrified young bait dogs. We would do anything for them. Their heads and bodies crossed with scars like unlucky lifelines in a human hand, yet whose tails still wagged when we reached to pet them. They knew me as the one who changed her mind about Presa Canarios when I found one wearing an e-collar that kept him from reaching his food. I had to hold the bowl up to his mouth inside the plastic cone for him to eat. I lost my fear of Presas. They knew me as the one who had the bully project on speed dial, who knew that owning more than 5 dogs in Connecticut was legally hoarding, who regularly fake-pulled a much-loved dog when I found that dog on the list, pretending to be a rescue group so that in the 24 hours it took for the shelter manager to learn that it was a fake, the dog would have time to be pulled for real. They knew me as one who got jacked up on rage and didn't know what to do with it until a dog dug a ball from a corner of his kennel and brought it to my side as though to ask, have you thought of this? They knew me as one who learned a phrase in Spanish. Lo siento mucho. I am so sorry. And used it often in the lobby when handed over a dog by owners who faced eviction by the New York City Housing Authority if they didn't surrender their pit. They knew me as the one who wrote a plea for a dog named Storm due to be killed the next morning and posted the plea and then went home to learn the next day that there had been 2 dogs named Storm in the shelter that night, and the one who needed the plea had been killed that morning. I had failed to check the ID number of the dog. So this isn't about heroics. It's an impossible job. I joined them in filth and fear, and then I left them there. They knew me as one who walked them past the homeless man on East 110th Street who said, you want to rescue somebody, rescue me. They knew me as one who saw through the windowed panel in a closed ward door a dog lift one paw and then another, offering a paw to shake, though no one was there, doing a trick he had once been taught and praised for, a dog not yet damaged but desperate. They knew me as the one who decoded the civic boast of a full-service shelter. That means it kills animals. That the full service offered is death. And they knew me as the one who learned that the funds allocated for the dangerous new floor had also been taken from medical, that the board had determined as non-essential. The first injection. The sedative. Before the injection of pentobarbital that kills them. And since it will take up to 15 seconds for the pentobarb to work, the dogs are then made to walk across the room to join the stack of bodies, only some of which are bagged. This will be the dog's last image of life on Earth. My fantasy has them waking up to find themselves paddling with full stomachs in the warm Caribbean, treading the clearest water over rippled white sand until they find themselves refreshed farther out in cooler water. In the deep blue reef scarred sea. They knew me as the one who asked another volunteer if she would mind holding creamsicle, a young vanilla and orange pup, while I cleaned his soiled kennel and made his bed at the end of the night. I knew that Katerina would leave the shelter in minutes for the hospital nearby where her father was about to die. She rocked the sleepy pup in her arms. She said, you're working too fast. She kissed the pup. She handed him to me. She said, you should take your time. We were both tired. and took turns holding the pup against our hearts. They saw this. They knew this. The ward went quiet. We took our time.
Once again, here's the author, Amy Hempel.
A few years ago, I was living in New York City, and a friend told me about some work she was doing, volunteer work, at an animal shelter that is known to be the worst shelter in the Northeast. I couldn't understand how she was able to do it. We both love dogs and cats, and it was a terrible, dysfunctional, high kill shelter. But she was able to do it, and I worried, how would I be able to do this, caring for dogs that were going to be put down? And I asked a Buddhist friend who said, well, doing it makes you able to do it. And I thought, oh, well, I'll try. So for a couple of years, I did the work described in the story. And while I was doing it, I didn't feel like I should be doing anything else, which was kind of remarkable to me. I'll just say that all the dogs in the story were real dogs I loved. And sometimes I took them home. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Samantha Mathis's reading of A Full Service Shelter. If you're new to Word Theater, you should know that this free weekly podcast features stories performed live at our in-person and streamed events. And if you can't join our monthly events live, enthusiast and patron members can always view beautifully filmed versions on your members page. And remember, you can support Word Theater and your local bookstore by picking up books at bookshop.org/shop/wordtheater. Special thanks to Jonathan Sachs for composing our theme music. And thank you to our podcast editor, Jason Lee, and our entire team of summer interns, led by our executive director, Allison Emilio. They have all been working hard to make our summer membership drive a success. It's the first time in 20 years we've actually done a summer membership drive, and we're counting on you to please join us. A special shout out to Davis Jackson and Ethan Nolander, and thank you always to Los Angeles County Department of Arts and Culture for your support. Everyone, please visit wordtheater.org for more information. Until next week, this is Cedaring Fox in Los Angeles, signing off.